This is File 79. This is Jean McMillan. I'm interviewing Mike Brenner about the Salisbury Volunteer Ambulance Service and anything else he can think of. Today's date is August 28th, 2014, and I'm interviewing him at the Scoville Memorial Library. What is your name?
Michael Brenner.
That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Your birthday, please.
11-13-54.
And your birthplace?
Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Your parents' names, please.
Francis and Charles.
Siblings?
David.
How did you come to the area from North Carolina?
We stopped in New Jersey temporarily. That's where I grew up. When I got out of high school, I enlisted in the service, and Dad and, well, as a family, we visited the area probably from the mid-60s through the early 70s when they finally made the move in 73. Dad wanted to retire up here, so it was a beautiful...
Beautiful area.
Beautiful area. Still is a beautiful area.
Oh, yeah. I'm assuming your educational background was all in New Jersey?
High school, I did college up here. I got an associate's degree in criminal justice up in... at Northwest Community College.
And Winston.
Yeah.
All right, tell me about the service.
Huh.
In relation to what you did later in life.
Oh, well, I enlisted in the Coast Guard. Vietnam was still going on in the 70s. At that point, there was a draft. My number had come up. I knew that they were going to call because the war wasn't over. Rather than have them tell me what to do, I enlisted in the Coast Guard, which I had a relationship. I grew up on the Jersey Shore. I was always around boats. As a Boy Scout and as a young man, I got involved with volunteer fire departments and stuff like that. So it was
a no-brainer, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of a no-brainer. And I saw the Coast Guard as not only as an education and an opportunity, but the opportunity to continue what I already started to do in kind of the emergency services mode. So, unfortunately, I went to boot camp in Cape May, New Jersey, and then I put in for overseas billets jobs, and they sent me to Governor's Island, New York. So I went from Brick Township, New Jersey, to Cape May, New Jersey, to Lower Manhattan.
Really get around.
I really got around. Yeah, I got to see the world. So I did 2 years on a ship there. Being a small boat coxswain and doing emergency services stuff and medical stuff, and then did 2 years in an investigation unit for the captain of the Port New York, which was very interesting.
I bet.
And
then you worked.
Did some training there with them that I kind of brought with me when I came back out, which kind of led me into the ambulance and fire department and everything back when I got out.
When did you get out of the service?
I officially finished my commitment in 77 for active duty, and then I did another 2.5 years of active reserve duty. So
it was about 1980-ish.
I was back in the area a lot. Yeah, 77, 78, and then obviously, as time went by, I was here more and more.
Okay. And
I got involved with the ambulance service when I got out in 77, because there was a need. There's always a need.
There's always a need. Oh, yeah.
There's always a need. So I got involved, and that just kind of flowed from what I had done as a younger person that I'd done while I was in the service, and then just,
You just kept on.
Yeah.
High or low.
Yeah.
More training.
Yeah. More training.
What's some of the training related to the ambulance service that you had?
When I was going to college about the same time out in Winsted as I was getting involved with the ambulance. So I got my water safety instructor's card, and I got my scuba self-contained breathing apparatus underwater card. I'm trying to think of what else. I think I was a first aid and CPR instructor for a while. And at that point, I was in the process of taking my EMT class while all that was going on.
Oh, geez.
So I could ride the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I brought all that service training, all rappelling and underwater stuff and all those things that they taught me in the service I brought with me too. So.
Sure. A man of many parts.
Yeah. Jack of a lot of little trades.
Well, in interviewing the other people, they've all said, if I've got a problem, I go to Mike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you have such a wealth of experience in so many areas, and you've been doing it long enough that you've got the background for it. And that makes a tremendous amount of difference.
I feel good about what I've done over the years that I've been doing it, and I think that I do it well. I don't want to brag, but I mean...
You do. Look, if I've interviewed 5 or 6 different people on all different levels, and they say, he's the man to go to, yeah. Rest assured, you're doing a good job.
So...
What's your actual title?
Actually, right now, I'm the assistant rescue chief down there. Over the years, since 77, I've held many positions down there. I've been the chief of service. I've been the assistant chief of service. I've been I was the rescue chief for
years.
I think at one point I actually held the first aid chief's job. I mean, so title's not important.
Getting the job done is
mm-hmm. is what it's all about. So,
and we're talking. You've been into the service since 1977. This is 2014, so you've been in a long time. Interesting.
Long time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's an illness rather than...
I can understand that.
I don't know that there's a cure.
when you had a regular job with the ambulance, what was your day and who were your crew members?
It's really evolved since 77 till now. When I got involved in 77, there was quote-unquote assigned teams, and there was a team leader or captain, and mm-hmm. and you'd take 24 hours, and you'd be responsible for responding if there was a call, and every week it backed up one day so that the rotation changed, so if you did Thursday this week, you did Wednesday the following week. Now, with everybody's schedules being so hectic over the years, it's evolved into when are you available and when can you do.
Mm-hmm.
So right now I'm riding Thursdays during the day of 1 week and Tuesdays of the following week during the daytime. During the daytime seems to be the critical stress point in what goes on. More and more people, as we get older, have taken jobs, and sometimes the jobs take us out of town. And when we were younger, we were around because we were doing jobs around town, and now, locally. So you could respond, but now more and more people are working either slightly or a lot out of the area. So the daytime shifts
they're hard to fill.
They're hard to fill. And it gets harder and harder every year. So now that I'm retired...
yeah, in quotes.
In quotes. I think I have more to do now than I did mm-hmm. before I was working full-time.
Oh, sure.
So I'm trying to do 2 days during the week around my wife's schedule and around a little traveling and doing some fun stuff. So.
Oh, you have to have the fun stuff. This is the fun stuff for me, I'll tell you.
There you go.
Other than schedules getting tighter, how else has the ambulance service changed over the time that you've been involved? I know
more regulations and more training.
Yeah.
You used to be able to come in and do a basic training class, and you'd have to do some stuff during the year, but it's almost like a full-time.
Yeah.
And they want more and more. And with the, even before 9/11, but specifically at 9/11, they've burdened...
Yes.
Both the fire and the ambulance services in all the towns across the entire nation with more and more
things,
skill sets
that
they feel that were, need to be required because of the unknown and the threat.
Does it make a difference, as far as the training is concerned, whether you're a volunteer ambulance or a paid ambulance?
No. Because there's mandates. OSHA has mandates. The State Department of Health has mandates. Homeland Security people have mandates. So, besides being trained medically and being up on illnesses and hazardous material and electric shock safety and all the stuff the health department wants, then you have a whole other group of regulations that come down from OSHA, which is the occupational guys saying, well, you need to have so many hours of driver's training, you need to have so many hours of this and so many hours of that, and then the Homeland Security people come in and go, well, if there's nerve agents used, you need that and you use these antidote kits, and you need to be able to recognize radiation and hazardous material, and you need to be able to put these suits on and use these respirators, and you need to, and it's like, it just keeps, it, you know.
Well, then, if you're
having... It's not a lot of fun anymore.
No, it doesn't sound
so. Big commitment.
If you have to have all these supplies, where do you get the money from?
A lot of times the federal government, when they make a mandate, they usually try to back it up.
Is the state
not as good about that as the federal government is, but they do what they can, and you kind of...
Do you write grants, or...?
There are some grants through different federal and state things that are available, and we try to get people trained in group training with other ambulance groups or other fire groups, or we're trying not to duplicate the same thing over and over again so that the resources can be spread far and wide without making the burden too bad. So a lot of times we split the cost up. And a lot of times the feds in their wisdom will have people trained and you just need to try to get on the schedule, which is horrendous because you're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people that
all have different schedules.
Well, yeah. And you got paid people and you got volunteer people. Paid people is easy. You came to work today, we're going to teach you this class. Trying to get a volunteer to give up more time besides what they're already doing.
And you can't. You really can't. Not to have commitments to family and other things.
Right. Well, and then you have to walk that line and keep that balance and they have to do it. So it's like, if you don't do this, then you can't ride. Do you really want to not be able to service the public anymore? So, I mean, sometimes...
Yeah, you're combined. It really is. How large an area does the Salisbury Ambulance Service cover?
Well, it covers the geographical boundaries of the town.
Which is about, what, 40 square miles?
Yeah, 40 square miles. I think it's close to 70 miles of roadways. And then because of the uniqueness of where we are, we also have what we call mutual aid agreements with all the towns around us. And because we border two other states, we cross into other states. So we have agreements with the squads over in New York State. We have agreements with the squads up in Massachusetts and all the ones down through Connecticut, and I believe we're even part because of our equipment cache. There's some statewide task force response teams.
Oh my.
So if the big one comes and it turns out and they need help,
you go.
Yeah. And we set up crews when 9/11 happened in case we had to go down. And we set up crews and geared up for other massive area-wide events. So,
okay, all right.
Not only here to help ours, but we're here to help...
Help everybody.
Yeah.
This is a unique area for rescues. Tell me about the different types of rescues.
Because of our water bodies and because of our mountainous terrain... In the low during the winter time for ice fishing, we spend some time on frozen bodies over semi-frozen bodies of water, with skating and sledding and ice fishing accidents, in conjunction with the fire department, and then we spend probably on the average year anywhere from 6 to 16 times up on the mountains, looking for those adventurous people that want to go walk and see nature.
That don't stay on the trails.
Don't stay on the trails, or they go up and they're not prepared, and you need to go in and find them. Thank God for cell phones at this point, because it used to be a blind search, and now it's a little bit more refined. So we've, over the years, put together and developed search and rescue protocols and equipment for those unfortunate citizens that...
that don't follow the rules.
That don't follow the common sense rules.
Yeah.
So anyway, so... And because we live in the corner of the state and we have a lot of motor vehicle traffic of all kinds, trucks, trailers, wide loads, big loads, you name it, we've refined our extrication, auto extrication and vehicle extrication equipment and training so that it'll meet the need of those
whatever
people
comes,
passing
yeah.
through. Yeah.
And I would also imagine that with so many senior citizens living in the area, you have the medical emergencies as well.
Oh, yeah, the medical, the bulk of what we do is medical stuff. The rescue stuff is, I think, knock on wood.
Sideline.
Yeah, kind of like a sideline job, but when those specialty needs come up, you need to kind of be prepared for them. But yeah, with the general population, I think, the average is in the 60s now.
Really?
Someplace, yeah, it's... Well, there's nothing to keep young people. You can't afford to live here. There's not a lot of work. So when you... I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's true.
And us young people are now getting older.
Yes, yes, we are, aren't we? I did Roger McKee yesterday. And he was born the same year you were.
Yeah.
And I said, how many years have you taught at Salisbury School? And he looked at me and he said, 35? And it was like, whoa! You know, it's really
yeah.
something.
Well, you know, when I started out and we came here, I'm just out of the service, so I'm not married. I don't have any commitments. Working and going to the college, and it's like, watching the kids that were kids when I was young now have kids, and
yeah.
now, I mean,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just,
they, yeah,
I've run this, we're running the cycle.
And, like with myself being a teacher,
right.
watching my kids have kids, and their kids have
kids,
and it's
right.
like, oh my God, it's, you know, it's a wonderful, for me, it's a wonderful experience,
right.
because I'm... In this job, I get to interview so many of my former pupils,
right.
and I am so proud of what responsible people
right.
they are and good parents that
yeah.
they are. And so for me, this is, you know, this is
yeah.
vindication of a lot of stuff.
It had an effect and it was good.
Yeah.
yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yep.
I even hate to ask this, but do you do any other civic activities?
I'm involved with the emergency management part of the town government with Jackie Rice
mm-hmm.
to mitigate
yeah.
emergencies at the town level. Trying to think.
Fire department?
Well, yeah, in the fire department.
SWASA?
No, well, I help during the wintertime, but it's not, I don't belong to the organization.
You're a volunteer now. Okay. Constable.
Yes. One of my few paying jobs.
Woo!
I actually work part-time for the town of Salisbury as a Marine patrolman and a police officer, so, yeah.
How many Marine patrolmen are there?
Well, we're just about to hire two more. When I first came on the job 20-something years ago, there was like 8 or 12. And over the years, people have retired and
mm-hmm.
moved away and whatnot. And I'm kind of like the last one left.
Last man standing.
So
you're going to hire
hire a couple more. So
and?
We're responsible primarily during the summertime to make sure that the waterways are safe. So whether it's the Housatonic River or whether it's Lakeville Lake or whether it's Long Pond.
Oh, my.
Or whether it's East Twin or West Twin.
That's a lot of water.
We wander around and keep the peace and make sure people are conducting themselves in a safe manner and that they've got, you know, they're doing the safe thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safety issue.
Okay.
Unfortunately, over the years, we've had some water accidents and people have lost their lives. So we're out there trying to prevent that injury and loss of life kind of thing. So it's critical. And then during the rest of the year, constable, police-wise, you know, covering the SWAS events over the winter, or covering Easter Sunday parades, or covering whatever event, or lately there's been a rash of funerals.
Oh, yeah.
Of very large size, so we've been out doing traffic details and, you know, trying to take care of the needs.
Filling in for wherever you're needed.
Yeah, you know. Okay. So, another very diverse group of duties.
But it uses a lot of the same skills.
Yeah.
It really does. And I know I asked you before, but I'm going to ask you again. Why do you do this?
It was a natural thing in the beginning. I think I developed it into a very good skill set.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I felt good about doing it. You see people in their worst when you see them from the fire department, the ambulance, or even from the police side.
Yeah.
You know, they're having that moment in their life where everything is just turned to crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that's the only way to phrase it.
So, I mean, you know, and trying to help them get through that as unlumpy as possible.
Good professional term.
Wow.
Unlumpy. But yes, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
They're at the bottom of the barrel and they need help.
So.
And it, as I said to Roger yesterday, for someone that's, you know, had a stroke or a heart attack or something, it's comforting to have somebody that they know.
Right.
That makes a great deal of difference. You're not in the hands of strangers. It's somebody that you know. It's a neighbor. And that in itself, just showing up, never mind whether you know anything, but just showing up makes such a big difference. Is there anything that you'd like to add to what you do, the ambulance service, anything that you'd like to add before we close?
I don't think so.
I
think we've kind of covered it all.
Thank you very much for your time and all of your skill sets.
Thank you.